Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Footmarks episode. I'm Varun Alvakonda, and I'm joined by the Good Area's designated writer, Shayan Ahmed Khan. And today's Footmark episode is on Red Bull Rohit. So if you haven't guessed it already, it's on the Red Bull career of Rohit Sharma, who just recently retired last week. So Shayan, I'm going to ask you, right? So Rohit Sharma debuts in 2013 against West Indies. He hits two centuries and then doesn't do a lot after that. So what do you think went wrong with early Red Bull Test career Rohit?
I think it was probably just that he didn't work out the right tempo of Test cricket in his early years. And he also had like fitness issues, injury issues at times. So he wasn't always a regular in the Test team, right? And the thing is that he was batting mostly at number 6. So India's 3-4-5 was mostly fixed. And Rohit might have been a better fit at, say, maybe in the top 5, somewhere in the top 5, right? But he was supposed to bat at number 6 in this team. And as we know, India often used to go with 5 bowlers. So I think his place was not really set in stone in Test cricket for a very long time. Of course, the talent was undeniable. And in fact, in the early days of Virat Kohli's captaincy, I remember that he used to get trolled for backing Rohit Sharma too much at times. People are like, why are you backing Rohit Sharma? But if you remember, in 2018, Nasir Hussain once tweeted that Rohit Sharma will be a very good Test player. You just need to have eyes to see it. When he played that one knock in South Africa. So he was very confident about his talent. And I think nobody ever doubted the talent bit. It was just about whether he can do it consistently away from home and like what is his right position? Where is he supposed to play?
Yeah, so just as a backdrop, before we further discuss Test Rohit, I think let's talk about domestic Rohit Sharma, right? So from 2008 to 2012 in first class cricket, he plays 35 Test matches. Right, makes 3,500 runs. So not test matches, first class matches.
Yeah,
makes 3,500 runs at an average of 76 and a strike rate of 70, including 1,400s and 1,350s. Right, that includes one triple century, two double hundreds, and two more 150 plus scores. Right, so yeah. To give a comparison, like would it be fair to say Rohit Sharma was the Sarfaraz Khan of the late 2000s?
Exactly, that is exactly the name that was coming to my mind when you were talking about these numbers. Right.
Yeah,
but I would be interested to know what batting position was he playing in.
So it was mostly, I think I can find this. Yeah, so he mostly bats at, so he averages 69 at number 4, 98 at number 5, and then 51 at number 6, though it was only 4 innings there, right? So that's a very standard batting positions for someone who's very young. So clearly just based on this talent and the hype he had, his Red Bull like inclusion was almost like expected, right? He was meant to make his debut in February 2010 versus South Africa, where VVS Lakshman and Rahul Dravid were unavailable for selection. So the two debutants were supposed to be Murali Vijay and Rohit Sharma. But Rohit Sharma gets injured playing football. So Pradhuman Saha makes his debut. So I was going to ask you, did Virat Kohli ask Ishan Sharma to put that ball there to sabotage Rohit's career?
If you'd go by the conspiracy theories of all these fan wars that keep happening, I wouldn't be surprised if someone comes up with that. So, but on a serious note, I think that definitely set Rohit back a bit in Test cricket. Like maybe if he debuts there, who knows how his career trajectory pans out from there. But then Rohit Sharma, when he makes his debut in that farewell series of Sachin Tendulkar and he makes 200s, then everybody is like, okay, this guy is a special talent. Now let's see what's going to happen. But then the overseas tours, they don't go particularly well for him. Again, he's not a regular in the team. This must be mentioned that he was in and out, in and out. Where he would show flashes of brilliance at times, but then actually, like, do you remember any standout innings from him in that early phase, like that 2013 to 2015 period that we keep talking about, where India had good batting surfaces away from home? And a lot of these guys,
I don't remember Murali Vijay away from home, but I think his standout innings does have to be his first ever innings, right? Because I was... So I was looking at it. India were like 150 for 6 and like him and Ravichandran him and Ashwin both have a 288 run partnership, right? That in a way does like almost like a brief window into what we'll see in Indian cricket for the next few years. He's almost, I think, a bit unlucky to be a number 6 in the wrong era for Indian cricket. Not only was he's number 6 in a time where India was just about to, like, not India and the world cricket was shifting to 5 bowlers. So, and when you're playing 5 bowlers, the first batter you get rid of is your number 6. Almost always, right?
Yeah. Right?
And the other thing is, Rohit was not competing with a top five that is old. He's competing against a top five that is young. Very young. Yeah, so you got Shikhar Dhawan, Murali Vijay, Chiteshwar Pujara, Virat Kohli, and Ajinkya Rahane. All of them have shown glimpses and performances, right?
Exactly.
And all of them have shown brilliance away from him, which is the most important thing. If Rohit Sharma, because in South Africa, so he bats at number 6 versus West Indies in India, then he's batting, he's actually the number 5 in South Africa.
Correct.
And Rahane is number 6, and Rahane does well in South Africa. He gets a 96.
He does.
And then Rahane also has good innings in New Zealand. So when
Rohit India's also looking, has a good innings in New Zealand, though, I remember. Yeah, I think he made 72. 70,
right?
And they were 12-3 or something. So there were some of those early signs that, yes, Rohit Sharma is a good... he has the potential to be a good test player. But it wasn't consistent. I think that is the issue.
Yeah, definitely. I think what I have observed with Rohit is that he's high variance.
Yeah.
So he's... lots of his errors do tend to be very early in the innings, more so than the average batter. I think when you're that high variance, I don't think number 6 works well for you, because if you're a top 4 batter, even if you have 4 or 5 single digit scores, you can make up that average by getting a double 100. What are the odds of you getting that a very high score batting at number 6, right? And then
you not make the argument that from a number 6 also, you don't always need it's probably fine for a number 6 to also be high variance in a way? Can we not make that argument?
I think it's fine from a team perspective, but I think from an individual perspective, it's what side of high variance are you? Because your average almost invariably doesn't look very good if your number 6 doesn't.
Right?
Because if you compare him to the previous number 6 India had, which is VVS Lakshman. VVS Lakshman was much more consistent than Rohit Sharma is. Right? And the fact that he's not... And he also suffered a bit from not being able to convert his good days. Because if we look at just number 6s, Rohit has 300s at number 6, and VVS only has 2 more at number 6, right?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Right?
VVS, so that's probably... Well, that is best at number 5, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, I think 6 is his best position. He averages 50 at number 6. 6 is his best position. So Rohit's, for all the talk as we were talking about, Rohit's best batting position is still number 6. It's still his most highest average, right? So there is an element. So the team went completely wrong. I just think that it's very unlucky. He's competing against Virat Kohli and Ajinkya Rahane for the number 4 and 5 spot. I think if you look at it, he's probably a test number 4 or number 5, isn't he? Everything we know, the knowledge. I can't blame the management for not going, well, why didn't he just open straight away? Because
And importantly, did he open in first-class cricket? When did he first open in first-class cricket? I think that is an interesting question here.
So 2009. He only opens 3 times in that 2008 to 2012 period.
Right. So then there is no precedent for the fact that Rohit Sharma has shown signs of being a first-class opener. Of course, there's the white ball stuff. So, but then how do you replace him with the other openers? At that point, Shikhar Dhawan, of course, Shikhar Dhawan was great at home. Of course, he was not that great away, but even then he had a good series in New Zealand.
He has a very good series in New Zealand, doesn't he, Shikhar?
I think he was the highest run getter, or among the highest few run getters. Or something.
I know
that
he gets 197 or something.
Yeah, and I think it was that game where India also had a very close loss. The first test match of that 2014 series. In that game, Dhawan was the main man for India, if I remember right.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, again, it's such the whole early Rohit is such a weird mix of things, because even accidentally, you expect Rohit to do well.
Yeah, probably. Right? But I just think it's probably a lack of continuity and form, maybe. And I think and if you remember, the interesting thing here is, even if you remember his ODI career, I think at times early on in his even as an opener, he was not very consistent at times. I don't know
how the numbers say, wasn't,
it's just what my gut feel is. Because he also used to have this thing that he would make a lot of low scores, but he would also make up for it by making big double hundreds and big hundreds and all those sorts of things.
Definitely. I don't think you can say that. His test selection warranted a place way before his ODI selection did. Especially, I think, from what we've seen, right? He does get an insanely long rope batting where he does. But also, we're talking about him batting at 5 and 6. He's, it's one thing where if he's batting at 5 and 6 and walking in at 10 for 3, I'd understand not doing well, right? So I'm just looking at... So it's just a center entry point. He's walking at 113 for 3, 315 for 3, 199 for 3, right? So, and he makes 42, 13 and 1 in those. So there's we have 68 for 3, 222 for 3, and then the first 10 for 3, right? He's in New Zealand, and he said he makes 72. So there must be something clearly about it. He doesn't know what to do when he's not walking in during a tough situation. I do think that there is like an element of him, like there must be like a almost like an Aravinda, that kind of element where he just tries harder when he's in a tougher situation. But I also usually don't like saying that because that really annoys me when people say that about Aravinda, where it's like, oh, he's better than Mahela and Sangam. I don't care if he's better than Mahela and Sangam, he's average like 15 less than them.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
It's like, if it is, that is completely Rohit's fault for not maximizing his own opportunities, right? Because the team did, like, they did give him a very long rope initially, and he just doesn't take advantage of it, right?
Yeah. Didn't he also bat at three at times? Like, I think Virat Kohli has dropped Pujara for him. I'm pretty sure that has also happened. So at some point, like in Australia or in Sri Lanka, I'll actually go and look this up.
He does bat at three. Yep.
Yeah.
So he was getting
a lot of opportunities early on, and somehow it was not working for him in tests.
So at three, interestingly, he makes 39, 53, and then six.
So we're going to number three, right? Yeah. So in Sydney, he makes runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he makes 53 and 39 in Sydney. Interesting.
That's not a bad number three in returns, right?
Yeah, that's not too bad. And then again,
as you said, they do like seesaw with this position or not, because I do think there is an element of Pujara was established by then. You're not removing Pujara from number three for Rohit.
My guess is they probably just wanted to see, okay, how does Rohit Sharma work at number three? Because what were the other games he played in that series? He played in Adelaide and he played in Brisbane. And at number six, he had a couple of starts in both the games, but nothing very concrete or substantial for a number six especially. Like, even if it was an opener, we could still say, okay, he's made the new ball old and that helps. Like the 2021 series, right? We often talk about Rohit Sharma that, okay, he played out the new ball well. It wasn't a great contribution. We're not saying that it was a great contribution, but in context of the series and against that new ball attack, him playing out those early overs, they did play a role in India doing well and going on to win that series. So, that's you have to give him some credit for it.
Yeah, that's probably the other frustrating thing I have with Rohit is a lot of the time he doesn't look. He rarely looks like he's struggling, and then he plays a stupid shot and gets out. Like there is an element of like soft dismissals that he has, which again does make me wonder if like I do like does he need to be dropped to almost wake up and actually like focus? Is there a reason why we see a lot of double centuries from him when he's been dropped early on? He's like, I can wake up now, right? Because a bit of an unrelated road, that's a personality Mumbai Indians take over, right? They're basically asleep for the start and then they wake up.
That happens with Mumbai Indians, definitely.
And even India with the whole first match loss thing, it's more so under Rohit, right? He's a weird dude, I think is the best way I can put it. So, do you think the team underutilized Rohit Sharma early on, or is it just Rohit just not ready?
I just think it's circumstances, really. I often hear in hindsight a lot of people say that maybe he should have started opening earlier on. I don't really see how that could have happened, when that could have happened rather. Maybe that 2018 season, but at what point in the 2018 season? Is it maybe in the Australia tour? Do they think about it at that point? But then they tried Mayank Agarwal and that worked for them. So it was a bit of a tricky scenario, and I think after that entire 2018, after that West Indies tour, they did make the call. So I don't think they were late in that or anything. And honestly speaking, so we'll talk about this more in detail. So do you think you were in the pro Rohit opening camp, or were you not like in favor of that when you first heard the news?
When I first heard it, I was a bit neutral about it. I was like, okay, let's see what happens, right? It's like, what could go wrong, basically? Because I didn't think that there's a part of me that was like, how is he going to handle overseas? I wasn't too worried about same. India. How is he going to handle overseas? But now that you mentioned it, right? So our West Indies tour happens. India, basically, I don't know how to say it as nicely as I possibly can. They destroy West Indies? They bullied them? You can't use kind adjectives for what they did to West Indies that series, right? West Indies just beat England. Their hopes were high, and India basically just brutalized them. Like, in a way, I don't think we can explain that in a child-friendly way, right? So once that happens, there's a long home tour, right? And India don't really have a consistent second opener. In fact, if you look at it, India don't really have a consistent opener from the point where Shikhar Dhawan stops making runs in like 2014, 2015, right? So they go through vast periods of time where, like, I don't think I could tell you who was India's consistent opener, like, after that whole Murali Vijay, Shikhar Dhawan partnership, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, even Vijay at some point just falls out of favor.
Mayank Agarwal actually started pretty well, didn't he?
So I'm thinking, like, there's a period where, like, 2015-16 to, like, 2018, they try everyone. Partha Patel opens, Gautam Gambhir comes back. Like,
yeah, Gambhir.
There's so much randomness in that. Randomness in the opening position, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think you could make a fair point that even accidentally, someone should in that Indian camp should have gone, we've tried everyone in domestic cricket. Can we not just try Rohit Sharma as well?
Maybe.
Right?
But I think they were just thinking about the fact that, okay, is there a precedent for him doing it in first-class cricket? Which is why I asked you the question of whether he had opened in first-class cricket before 2019, rather, not just in that early period.
So when I think Rohit was given the opening slot in 2019, the comparisons are immediately drawn to Virendra Sehwag. It's a very similar situation. So Sehwag I don't think Sehwag ever opens in first-class cricket by that point. Ooh. He's a more so a number four, number five batter from whatever. So Ganguly is like, well, there is no slot in the middle order. Mm-hmm. Do you want to open, right? So I do think sometimes people overblow that because that's a very standard way of doing test cricket things. Where you're like, you give a rookie a bat position at number six. And when do you think they're ready? You push them to the top four, right? But I think you could give both of them some credit is that immediately asking them to open after not doing anything is a bit risk, right? I'll give them a bit of that, but that's quite a normal thing in Test cricket. It's not like we can say, well, writing Virat Kohli at number four is a revolutionary decision, right? It's like, that's standard Test cricket evolution. He graduates in a bit. In a way, Rohit's very, like, he's almost stuck at number six, in a way, like VVS Lakshman would have been. Is that right? Because there's some people who were better than him.
Right, so interestingly, since you brought up Sehwag, so I was just reading this one news article and Virat Kohli had said that getting Rohit to open in tests has been discussed for a long time. And he said this in October 2019, right? Mm-hmm. And he said that the batsman has the ability to put bowling attacks under pressure in the manner of Sehwag. So it is exactly what we were talking about. So that is probably the mindset they were going in with. Like, okay, this guy has made a lot of wide ball runs. He's clearly one of the best ODI openers in the world. Why not just give him a go opening in test cricket? At that point.
Yeah, so it's interesting you mentioned the wide ball opener part, right? So 2018-19, we see a lot of fun wide ball openers opening. Alex Hales, Jason Roy, Martin Guptill.
Yeah.
And all of them fall flat on their faces, right? The only successful wide ball opener that we know was a successful test opener was David Warner. But David Warner, I think a lot of people don't realize this, almost averaged 15 shield cricket when he debuted for Australia. Right, so it's not like they took Warner from T20 cricket and made him a first class opener.
But he hadn't played a lot of first class cricket though, had he?
No. But he still made first class runs as an opener, right? In a way, like Martin Guptill, Jason Roy, Aaron Finch. Let's not forget Aaron Finch, right?
Yeah. He was also there. Every single thing. 19.
So Rohit Sharma could have so easily become like a victim of that, right? Where you just saw a bunch of openers who just don't make runs.
Yeah. So I guess Nasser Hussain was right in saying that Rohit Sharma. He has the talent to be a test player and those sorts of things.
Does Rohit get twin hundreds when he opens?
Is it the exact same game? I think it might be, actually. Yes,
he gets a double hundred in the different game.
I think that was a different game. So against... you're right. So he gets 176 and 127 at Vizag.
His first
game as the test opener.
Yeah. And him and Mayank have a mammoth partnership, right? As an openers.
Yeah, I think it's the same game.
Mayank gets a double hundred in that innings. I know that.
Exactly. Mayank gets 215. And you know, it's not a bad bowling attack. They face Vernon Philander, Kagiso Rabada, Keshav Maharaj, Dane Peat, Sinuram Muthuswamy, and Dean Elgar.
Yeah. So I think you'd agree with me when I say this. That is when this Indian test side peaked. That home series.
That is when the Indian team peaked.
Yeah, the Indian test side, batting and the bowling
combined together.
Because Pav in a way.
See their captain. He was like, okay, these guys are scoring 500 and declaring and we're getting out.
An easy job for him. Bat first, make 600 and batters out of the game, right?
Exactly. Was the peak. And it was a series where India's fast bowlers also came into the picture because it wasn't just about spin domination. The fast bowlers were excellent. The batters were making big runs. Like, that was just the culmination of all the good work that the Indian team had done at home.
So I think India's bowling peak was 2021, where I don't think we had as many high-quality bowlers as we did in 2021.
Yeah, I think that's a good perspective,
because batting peak would be the whole Ganguly-Sachin, that era, right? Clearly. Mm-hmm. But correct, I think 2019 was a point where the batting was insane. And the bowling was insane as well. So do you remember, like, we were doing in like before the New Zealand series, we're like, oh, which test team in the past could beat India? We were like, India might still win, right? I think the 2021-22 teams could just scrape by. Like, but that 2019 team, I think, would destroy anyone in the history of cricket, test cricket, in India, right? I don't know how you beat that team on those Indian pitches, is what I'm trying to say in a roundabout
way. I think it's also because so many of the players were in their peak form, peak performance ages and all those sorts of things.
Also, that was the last time I felt safe watching this team bat.
That whole point. I think the decline of the whole Indian test batting starts from that 2020 New Zealand tour, really, doesn't it?
Yep. Everyone collectively becomes out of form, basically.
And then after that point, so
Rohit Sharma was the only Indian batter who was consistently, him and Rishabh Pant were probably like the two Indian batters.
Correct.
Making runs for India, right? Ranked turners, which is my next discussion point, right? So Rohit opens in what was possibly the best Indian team ever, right? He has a very easy gig. And then within a year or two of him starting to open, the Indian team basically are like, well, we played on these absolutely decent batting surfaces for the last 4 years. But Rohit, why don't you just start opening the batting on these ranked turners? Because we need WTC points, right? And not only that, we want you to go away and also face incredible fast bowling on just when the pace playing pandemic stuff.
The wobble ball.
And Rohit, again, to be fair, I do think, so Rohit misses the 2020 New Zealand series because he's injured, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the most brain dead takes I saw was like people are like, Rohit faked his injury to miss overseas tours.
Yeah, again, but that's one of the conspiracy theories that people always come up with, right?
I do think he was extremely lucky to have missed them.
He may or may not have made runs. That's a different argument altogether. Why would he fake it?
So that's my next point, right? Was making runs when none of the Indian batters. If you look at his match factor, when the batting average, the top 6 hours are less than 30. I think generally he's like 1.96 times, 9 times better. And in India, it's only like 2.1, 2.2 times better. Yeah. And he's worse when the top six make runs in India. And that does not surprise us one bit, does it? Like,
correct.
In fact, from the very first test match innings, they were 150 for six.
Yeah.
Right? So he did not have an easy gig. So the only time Rohit seemed to make runs was when India were in trouble.
At home, particularly. Of course, that England tour, I think that comes to mind when you think about it.
Yeah.
Of course, KL Rahul was also really good in that series. So that opening partnership as a whole, they worked really well. I think 2021 has to be the peak of Rohit Sharma, the test batter. There is no question about that.
Undoubtedly it was, right? So his first great test innings, I would say. Even though, like, I'd say his hundreds in versus South Africa were great. Well, they were good. But his first, I think, legitimately, like, holy shit, this guy's a test batter, was against that 161 versus England.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it was a turning pitch. The ball was spitting dust. If you go back and look at the highlights, it's like, from ball one.
was not an easy wicket to bat on.
You should not have been able to make runs on that wicket. I don't know about you, Sean, but that surprises me a bit, because it's not that I don't think Rohit was great, but at no point in my life do I ever remember someone saying Rohit is an elite player of spin bowling.
But he is, isn't he?
He is, like, it's not like people were going, well, this guy is so good versus spin, he's going to make runs on ranked turners. I don't think the team knew he was that good on those pitches. I don't think Rohit himself knew he was that good on those pitches, right? He adapted in a way that I don't think Kohli, Rahane, Pujara, they don't adapt, right?
Yeah, that's true. But then again, Rohit Sharma did make a lot of first-class runs. So you'd have to assume some of those came on ranked turners. What do you think about that?
No, I don't doubt that he didn't make runs on spinning pitches, right? If any Indian batter that's made the test team is good versus spin, that's one thing I do think we should reiterate, that people are like, well, this guy's not good versus spin. It's impossible for you to stand out in Indian cricket if you're bad versus spin. Even Ajinkya Rahane, talk about Ajinkya Rahane, he was very good versus spin early on. He just doesn't make any runs later on. He just gets worse as his career moves on, right? Even Rohit Sharma,
there's a great example that innings in that match in Delhi where he makes spin hundreds, right?
Again,
on a difficult wicket.
Yeah, the whole series was brilliant, right? So again, it's one of those things where you just look at it. Like, you're saying, like, he makes runs on Ranji Trophy. So this is what, 2021? How many first class matches do you think Rohit Sharma plays between 2013 and 2021?
Not many, man. Like,
and when he's playing international, he's not playing in ranked turners, right?
Yeah, maybe 7 or 10.
Wait, I think I could check this. One second. I should have been had this prepared, but I think, like as I said, it's going to be a structural mess. How many did you say from 2013 to 2021?
I think around 7, 8, 10, like around
excluding
that.
India. Excluding
yeah,
India.
Yeah, excluding India. Excluding India.
He plays one in 2015 and one in 2016. The last 20 plays is in 2025.
Oh, okay.
So if him making runs in ranked turners was Ranji performance, if the last time he regularly plays Ranji cricket is in 2013, that's an 8-year gap. So somehow he gets so good versus spin. And we know Ranji pitches are not ranked turners, right? They're good batting surfaces. Where
at times they're even team-friendly surfaces, aren't they? Because they want
to
prepare.
I don't think it was as much in Rohit's.
Not as much back in the day, maybe. But I think that thing also started, right? And Rohit might not have been a huge part of that. But yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, that's why I'm very surprised that Rohit is the one who makes runs on ranked turners, because we've heard about how good Pujara is versus spin. We know how good Virat is versus spin. At no point in my life do I ever recall hearing someone talk about Rohit versus spin. It's always, well, Rohit's brilliant versus pace bowling. He's brilliant at pulling the ball, right? Then I've even heard Rohit can't play the new ball. I've also heard Rohit can't play the moving ball, but I've not once in my life ever heard he's a brilliant player of spin bowling.
Fair enough, actually. Now, I don't actually remember the narrative at that point about his spin player, but I think it just completely changes from that series onwards.
I don't think part of the reason is I don't think the ability versus spin is brought up as much in Indian cricket, because everyone assumes Indians are great versus spin.
Yeah,
we talk about it way more now. It's the whole Rahane just stops making runs at home, right? That's when it was really.
Or even the whole Indian batters. We did that big piece right last year about how Indian batters against spin and those sorts of the things. So when they were making runs, nobody was really talking about it all that much. And when they stopped making runs, everybody was like, okay, these guys can't play spin. This is why VVS Laxman and that era is better. And they might be better. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be better, but the point
I do think
that
there is an element of them being better, because the Indian teams in the past just picked their best players to spin. Whereas India now don't pick the best players to spin, because they're like, well, we'd rather have a guy who's 7 out of 10 versus pace and 7 out of 10 versus spin than one who's like 5 versus pace and 10 versus spin, right? Like, for example, Navjot Singh Sidhu is probably, he's like an average player of pace bowling, but an elite player of spin bowling.
Yeah, fair enough. Good example that. But I think from the 2000s team, more or less, everybody was good against pace also. What do you think?
Yeah,
2000s onwards. Yeah.
We have Sachin and Dravid,
so that's out of question.
VVS Lakshman is quite good, right?
VVS Lakshman is also, I think, really good against both pace and spin. And
Sehwag was good against pace and spin.
Yeah, and then Ganguly, I think he was actually better against pace based on his record.
He's, I think, the classic 7-7. Where he's like, you don't expect him to be elite in any condition, but he's good enough in every condition.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I think I compare him to like the modern day Rahane in a way.
Yeah.
So, again, talking about that. So, in that whole Rohit saga thing, Rohit Sharma has 12 centuries in Test cricket, right?
Yeah.
And all 12 of them results in wins, which is one of the most insane statistics ever, because we heard of Gundappa Vishwanath. It's like, but his centuries don't result in defeats. So there's a draws. Every Rohit Sharma century results in a win. And as we know, it's not like the early Ian Bell. But do you remember the Ian Bell stat that like his first few hundreds were never the only century in his team? He always was the second centurion in his team or something, right?
Yeah.
That's not really
like
the case with Rohit Sharma.
Yeah.
That's not really the case with Rohit, is it? Like, he's made runs everywhere.
Yeah. I think especially towards the end of his, like, not the end, towards his opening stint, I think a lot of his hundreds have been when he's not had much help. So if we talk about the knocks, I think 161 obviously has to be a mention. Then that 127 at the Oval. Did anyone else make 100 in that innings? No, they didn't, I'm pretty sure.
Parker gets to in 50s, I know that.
Yeah, I think a lot of players got like 40s, 50s. Like, it was a good contribution overall from the team, but Rohit Sharma was the only centurion again. And then again in Nagpur, again he was the only centurion. Then
Nagpur
against England, he had a couple of hundreds, didn't he? But I'm not sure if he was the only
centurion.
But he wasn't the only centurion then, I think. Yeah.
In what, sorry?
In the England series in 2024, when he makes 200s, I think one is at Rajkot and one is at Dharamshala. So I think once there was Jadeja and the other time there was
Shubman
Gill. In Rajkot, India were in trouble. They were like 30 odd for three.
India were in trouble. Him and Jadeja have a good
partnership. Him and Jadeja bailed the team out. So yeah.
So what would you say is the best test innings you've seen Rohit play?
Yeah, man, I think it has to be between 161 and 127. I think it's probably up down to your personal preference. I feel like that 127 might be more special in a way because there was always a question mark about Rohit Sharma, the test batter away from home. And honestly, even after he started opening, I wasn't fully convinced yet till that England tour. Were you?
No, I wasn't either. Right? But again, I think to be fair to Rohit, he just misses a lot of series.
He does. But like there was that fact that he didn't have an overseas 100 away from, like, he didn't have an overseas test 100. So he had to, like, answer that, right? And he did that in the Oval Test.
That was a,
and
I remember that being
India
a very
were
big
behind
deal.
In the Oval Test. So I think that also adds some more context.
Yes.
I think they were behind by 99 runs after the first innings.
Yes. There was a 99 run.
That also adds some more value. So I actually like the Nagpur innings as well a lot. So I think it's from these three that are his most memorable ones. Actually, if we talk about his non-100 scores, that 83 at Lord's that we were talking about earlier, that was also a special knock. I think that was like the first proper sign of, okay, wow, Rohit Sharma is working in Test cricket as an opener now. Like, now you have to trust him, man. He's going to do well from here on, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. So I think in Test, so in SENA countries, he averages about 34 as an opener, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if I've done this correctly. So the most interesting I've found is he opens in 22 times in SENA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he plays more than 50 balls about 12 times. So I think
bad.
If we say that like 50 balls is getting started,
yeah,
right? It's a completely arbitrary number, but I think I just like it. It's nice and round, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very decent starting percentage.
I
think his main issue again.
Think, yeah.
I remember lots of times he used to get to like 35, 40, 45.
Exactly,
and then he just gets out. Right?
Yeah.
Which is why I don't think his
like
average looks very good. Right?
Yeah.
I think if you compare this to, I think, Sehwag only faces like 18 times in 57 innings or something as an opener. So so he's getting started, which is like something that really annoys me about Rohit. Is like, I'm like,
yeah. I think it became like a meme during that
he needed
series.
One or like two more hundreds at some point, right?
Yeah. I think
in fact,
if we talk about those starts, it's those two games in Australia, then it's that WTC final, then it's, I think, the first test versus England. Like, for four matches in a row overseas, it was like, okay, Rohit Sharma is getting starts, but where are the big runs? Like, at some point, you want your opener to make big runs as well, right?
So
and
the
then
first
I think that starts at Lords, then at Oval.
Yeah. So the first semi opens is in Sydney versus Australia, right? In that, the BGC, he makes 52 of 98. He makes 26 of 77. 44 of 74. And then 7
exactly.
of 21, right?
Yeah.
I remember one thing I did, I went and looked at the cricket for scorecards. I was like, I think we could say that he threw away all his wickets in every single one of those innings. Right?
Possibly.
I think he did. It's the softest missile who threw away a very good start, right? I think he makes one more 100 or two more 100 in 10, I think his legacy just completely changes. I think it's completely fair of people to just go like, he was like a good opener, but he probably did underperform in SENA as an opener,
yeah,
right?
Even I believe that he definitely underperformed for his talent. And like, I think I'm not fully on the side of things that Rohit Sharma was absolutely great in SENA countries as an opener. I don't like, I know it was batting was hard. And if you go and look at how batters have performed in the 2020s, like Indian batters in the 2020s in SENA countries, again, like the best average is about 35, 34. It's just like that. But then again, I think for Rohit Sharma, it's actually when he shifts down the order, back down the order in Australia, I think that also like really hurts his numbers overall. If you look at his overall numbers, because he was batting lower down the order, that didn't work. He came back up, that didn't work. Then after MCG, of course, that ended up being his last game. So
yeah. So I think if we actually just look at his median as an opener, it's like 24.5. Mm-hmm. That is on the lower end of things, right?
Interesting.
You'd ideally want that to be about 30. So that kind of line. But on the flip side, he has one of the best conversion rates ever for an opener.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's like, so again, that doesn't surprise us one bit, does it?
Yeah. So I think the thing is that he might, if there is like, what is that curve called? A hazard curve where you can look at when a batter is most likely to get out. I think there's a graph for that. So
yeah, him and
we can say that for Rohit Sharma. Exactly. So for Rohit Sharma, what happens is that when he's around the 30s, 40s, maybe there's a vulnerability that he'll get out around this time. Then maybe once he crosses a certain pattern, like, okay, now he's going to make runs. Is that what we are saying here? Because he has a low median score, but he has a high conversion rate. And we are saying that he gets starts.
That's probably the most interesting thing. So, because
exactly.
Like, if you look at that profile, that reads a lot like a number four batter. I don't know about you, to me, like, because we still haven't done enough research on this, but to me, for me, the top three, I'd rather have someone who's low variance but very consistent. So I prefer a guy who makes like 10 40s instead of a guy who's like, what was it, like 400s and six ducks.
Oh, right. That is an interesting question, actually. I haven't really thought much about this, but
because I'm thinking about it from the point of view that the opening partnership is the one guaranteed partnership of an innings.
Yeah.
Right. Any other combination can be anything depending on the wickets and the situation, the entry points. But you know for a fact that, like, so is it more valuable for your openers to be like 80 for, well, I don't know, one, but the turn the first wicket falls, or on the third, like the 25th over, right? Is it more beneficial? Do you get more runs that way from your middle order?
I think it's an interesting question. We need to do more research on this.
So what do you think just of the offset? Just a bit of a tangent. We did promise a mess, structural mess, so we're continuing there.
Yeah. Even I think I'd also go with the 1040s, but now that I'm thinking of it. And this is the sort of thing that we see with KL Rahul as well, right? Like when we have these overseas tours, KL Rahul is really good at the start of these tours. And then people are like, okay, KL Rahul, the thing is that any type of player does well, then people start saying that injustice happened with this player and like he has not been treated fairly with this captain did that, this coach did that. And you'll see this again. If the Indian batters don't make runs, people will be like, Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma were removed. They were removed on purpose and now they are suffering. And if they make runs, then they'll be like, okay, Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma were shit. Good that they went away and all those things. So it's all just extreme reactions. So speaking of KL Rahul, he starts off really well. But then he slowly towards the end of the series, he doesn't make as many runs. And we've seen that trend now in multiple series, haven't we?
So sorry, Sean, you were asking.
No. I was just saying that if we're talking about Rohit Sharma or KL Rahul, like we would rather that players like them, they are more low variance and they give more starts, what we would call like 30s and 40s, rather than them making big scores and then not making any runs in the rest of the series. Is that the way we're talking about this?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think like having a consistent opening partnership, to me, at least, like that's my hypothesis, right? It helps your middle order more, doesn't it? Because I don't know if teams necessarily think that way, right? Because we don't know that.
I see your point.
Like 100 or it's 150 is more likely to win your test match, right?
But actually, let's look up who are the batters that have a very high median score as test openers. Let's think about it once.
No, I have the list of it.
It's Chris Rogers.
So Simon Cattish is 43.
Simon Cattish, yeah.
But he doesn't open actually, much. Jack Hobbs, not surprising.
Yeah, of course.
So we can look
Shane
at the coefficient of variation.
Shane Watson actually has a very low variance.
Which again, is completely adds up, right? Because how many 50-plus scores does Shane Watson have, right? In fact, I think Jared talks about it almost as a negative to Watson because he just kept getting 50s and just not making it. So his opening average is like 40,
Did he have that
45.
Joe Root thing? Because for some reason, I don't remember what was test career all that well, I think. Like, I have very vague memories here and there, but I don't remember it too. I remember the memes, him getting LBW. That was a very famous one.
He's got the classic all-rounders underachieving with the bat for a long time.
Correct.
And then when he gets good, they just put him to open. Would have been better off just putting him in the middle order, right?
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, we were just talking, so like we can look at this coefficient of variation, which is just a fancy way of standard deviation divided by mean. So so the lower it is, the more consistent you usually are for your mean, right?
Yeah.
So the most inconsistent opener we have is Atapattu, which again kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah,
and then Rohit Sharma again.
Did he make like five ducks in his first few innings and then something of that sort? Yeah.
So Rohit's with the Mark Taylor, Karunaratne, Dilshan. Man, I'm a Khawaja, the whole cluster.
Khawaja,
right? To be in.
Yeah.
I think also, like, so Rohit is basically competing with two other great openers in his era, right? Usman Khawaja and Dimuth Karunaratne. I'd probably have him over Karunaratne, but he probably isn't as good as Khawaja, right? Khawaja makes runs everywhere as an opener.
Yeah, I think Rohit versus Karunaratne is an interesting one. Karunaratne has a higher sample size, so. And he's played for a relatively weaker batting side. So I think that's an interesting debate for sure. I don't think he's better than Khawaja for sure. So, but yeah, I think there have been times where Rohit has been better than them. There have been times, like, if we look at certain specific periods, that Rohit Sharma has actually done really well as a test opener. But if we're talking about full careers, I think it's a fun one. But I'd have Khawaja as the best out of these three.
Yeah, definitely, right? Again, it's like Rohit. So if you have to say with Rohit, he's unbelievable in India.
Yeah.
He's like, I guess you would say he's decent in center. I don't think you'd say he's great. But if you look at like Indian openers in center, there are not many of them are particularly good.
Right? I think it's obviously because it's the toughest challenge, right? Like,
yeah,
people need to realize that it's difficult to guard.
So is it only Gavaskar kind of does really well in center? Like, because Virendra Sehwag isn't very good in center, is he?
Sehwag is really good in Australia, right? So I think we have to look
at this by country. I think Sehwag is only good in Australia.
I think Sehwag was really good in Australia, but not in the other three. You're right there. And then I think, then what about KL Rahul? I think KL Rahul
is the other one. Could you not make a very good argument that he was a better center opener than Rohit?
KL Rahul?
Yeah.
I think KL Rahul definitely has more iconic performances. So obviously, he has played more also than Rohit Sharma as a test, as an opener in Sena countries. And he's also had a few more failures because of that, because he's played more. But I still think I'd also go with KL Rahul at this point. So if
we just look at Sena, Gavaskar averages 45 in Sena, right?
I think we should add West Indies as well for him.
So West Indies, I think that dilutes things a bit for the other areas. That's what I'm worried about. For the current I'll still Yeah, can I?
No, I think for we have to look at this current generation.
So it goes up to 52 for Gavaskar.
Correct.
But that's partly because he doesn't always play the best West Indies attacks. So it's 35 for Sehwag, 35 for KL. And then like if you include West Indies, it goes to 40 for Rohit, right?
Yeah, because in West Indies, he made a lot of runs in this last season.
Yeah, and Murali Vijay is actually only 28. So it's a bit fun that both of them were about to debut at the same time, right?
Yeah, because I think correct.
They're probably the people, two batters I think you can compare a bit as openers.
Yeah.
I don't think there is as much between them or as much different from them as people would think. Right? Because Murali Vijay, for like a good 1 or 2 year period, makes runs in center almost everywhere.
Exactly. I think Rohit misses that one phase, that like when Rohit is not been reliable over a full cycle in Sena countries, whereas I think Murali Vijay has that from 2013 to 2015. So I think that is probably one differentiator. But then 2018, Murali Vijay also really struggles, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Those were some really difficult surfaces to bat. Exactly. Yeah, but he does have, you remember that one innings where he makes 127 balls, he makes 25 runs in South Africa. I can't remember which test match. Was it the Johannesburg game or was it the one before that? But he does have like this really interesting contribution.
He has a very interesting period, like, right? So, December 2013 to... What was it?
Oh, it was Johannesburg. It was the second innings of Johannesburg. I think that we have to value that high because that was a very low-scoring game and, like, the way...
That was a brutal pitch, wasn't it? That's what I remember.
Yeah, man, it was not fit for cricket. Like, let's just put it that way.
That's a brutal pitch, that, like...
Yeah.
I think, to be fair, to Rohit, he's quite lucky. He does miss a lot outside a lot of these pitches.
I think him being bad almost helps that one. South Africa tour where like a lot of batters were struggling to make runs. Obviously, I think
he misses 2021 because of injury.
2021, 2022.
He misses New Zealand because of injury. He doesn't open in England because of injury in 2022. Then he plays 4 test matches. And he misses the first 2 tests in Australia, right? In 2021 as well. The first two tests.
And then he misses Perth this time.
He misses Perth this time. Because of injury, of course.
Then that's the end of his test career. So
I think him missing that many is kind of why I'm like, his Sena legacy is a bit more meh for me.
Exactly.
Because if he plays all of them and still averages 35, I think I'd rate him much higher, right? It's the fact that he misses so many Sena tests.
Correct.
It's where I'm like his whole legacy is very confusing. I think we use this term a lot on good areas, but he is basically an all-time good of Test cricket, isn't it? Like, would you say he's not good enough to be an all-time good?
No, I think in Test cricket we can call him an all-time good, and I would actually be interested in doing this project of where he ranks among the greatest Indian Test batters of all time, because we keep talking about this stuff, but I would actually be interested to look at it in more depth. And seeing, okay, where does Rohit Sharma's contribution actually lie? Where do his contributions actually lie with respect to all the Indian Test batters that have played? Because there have been a lot of great batters, right? So it would be fun to look at it. But there is a good comparison. I would even add Gautam Gambhir in this. So I think these three are the ones who are like very similar to your like Test openers for India, I would say. Like, I think the order could be subjective depending upon what you like and your way of looking at things. So now I have their Sena numbers open in front of me as openers. Yeah, so Sehwag is 32, Vijay is 30.5, KL Rahul is 32.6, Rohit Sharma is 34.5, but he has played less, like about half the innings that these guys have. So I think that is one thing that makes his legacy a little more complicated, doesn't it? The same way home does for KL Rahul, right? Like, KL Rahul, if he makes more runs at home, there is absolutely no question about his quality as a test batter. We would have no doubts about it. And again, I think he also has that Rohit Sharma thing of missing games. Like, that's just really unfortunate that two batters of that talent, they haven't been able to make a consistent mark, like, in terms of just being there and playing regularly. Like, say, a Pujara.
Again, missing games and inconsistent batting positions, right?
Exactly, KL inconsistent as well. Batting positions and, in like, not playing games consistently the way, say, a Pujara or a Virat Kohli did throughout their careers. So, like, availability.
But I think I'd also say that is 100% their own fault for not securing a single position, isn't it? At least at KL Rahul's
position. I'm not saying it's their fault or anyone's fault in as such, but it's more like if you just have an injury at the wrong time, it's kind of unlucky, right? Isn't it? It's kind of unlucky, but then again, yeah, that is it is a part of it, and we have to judge their legacies accordingly then.
Yeah, so I think one thing I think in our group, so in our private chat, we talk about this a lot more recently, is the depth of attacks they face, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you this. Does the depth matter if you're an opener? Because let's say, like, because I can understand the depth mattering more if you are a number four or number five. But if you're an opener, would you not be more scared of the two best bowlers because you're facing them? Because we talked about
that's
this,
a very
right?
good point, actually. Yeah. So, but now that I think of
South Africa, for example, at one point they had a bowling attack of like Pollock, Donald, Klusner, and Callis, and then what was it? I forgot who it was. Like Paul Harris or Paul Adams, one of those.
Craig McMillan, wasn't he?
One of those random all rounders they had, right? And then if you compare that to the more recent attack, you have Rabada, Jansen, Ngidi, Noke, whatever. I can completely understand. I have no problem saying this attack is better than the older attack overall. But if you're an opener, are you more scared of Pollock and Donald or Rabada and Jansen?
Yeah, I think that is a good question, actually. Now that I think of it, even I would go with Pollock and Donald in this instance.
Yeah, that's one thing where I'm like, I was thinking about it after a chat, so that's because I was like, okay, does it really matter?
I have a solution of sorts for this. We should look up what percentage of bowling do the openers face from numbers 3, 4, 4, bowlers in positions 3, 4, 5 compared to 1 and 2. So if they face a lot of 1 and 2, then I think that has to matter more, doesn't it?
I assume they have to. They almost have to face 1 and 2, right? Because they're facing the two best bowlers at their freshest with the ball as the newest,
saying,
right?
Like, in terms of all the balls that they've faced, what percentage of their deliveries have come against 1 and 2 and then against 3, 4, 5? We should look that up once and compare that with number fours and number threes and so on.
I don't think we can do that right now. It has to be with ball by ball.
Yeah, not right now, of course. Like, it's a good question, I think.
It's a very interesting cricket piece to look at that. Because
I didn't actually think about this at all. Because since we were talking about this, I was also thinking about depth of bowling attacks. But then now that you're saying it for an opener, it might be the first two bowlers. Maybe the first change bowler. Maybe we can talk about third position bowler as well. But I think after that point...
Oh, yeah, Hansi Kronje, I think, was the other bowler, by the way, in that list.
Hansi Kronje was also there, correct.
Yeah, because I think if you're a batter, there's a big difference when you're walking out and you're facing Anrik Noke or Moni Moko compared to facing Lance Klusener, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
We were looking at... The other one we were looking at was Virat Kohli. Virat Kohli had no hope of making runs in South Africa with the bowling attacks he faced.
He still made a lot of runs.
He didn't have a... He had no relief. There's no release at that
exactly.
bowling attack.
So
I think we know Rohit Sharma did well because he opens versus Broad and Anderson, which is about as good a new ball pair as we've seen in Test history.
Absolutely.
It's like Wasim Bakar, like Walsh Chambers, again, Paul Donald.
Has to be up there.
Philander, they're up there. They're in the top five, top 10 at least. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's done well. And so Rohit, the one place he really does struggle, I think, as an opener is South Africa, but like he only opens there twice and no one makes runs. And then he still has one decent innings. So he does one, like a 39 on a pitch where like India were bowled out for like 170.
I think in that innings only Virat Kohli, Shubman Gill and Rohit Sharma made runs in that innings.
India lost six wickets for no runs, right?
exactly. I remember that very well.
Stupidest game I've seen live, by the way.
That was a crazy game. And then in the second innings, I think Rohit Sharma was like dropped a couple of times and then he still ended up staying not out. And then Kohli got out in a very silly way. He got out like down the leg side, basically, like when four runs were left. So like very stupid shit was happening in that game. But the point being that Rohit Sharma had that one good test as an opener in South Africa. In the first test, he didn't make runs. And then he didn't play in 21-22. So I think it's just hard to say like this. With the other players, we know that if there is a significant sample size, we're like, okay, fine. They have played more, so we can judge them accordingly. I think with Rohit Sharma, this is where the difficulty starts.
So, again, I was going to ask you, would you say Rohit is the most aesthetically pleasing batter you've ever seen?
Personally, I think I would probably still be, if it's about aesthetics, I'd still be biased for Virat Kohli. But I think Rohit Sharma is also really high up my list. Whenever this topic comes up in group chats among friends or anything, I always have Rohit Sharma in like my top 3 or my top 5.
Mm.
I think maybe even second at times. So I think even AB de Villiers for me, I think I really like the way he batted. Of course, he's like that 360, but even his straight batted shots were so good to watch. So I think he also qualifies as an aesthetically pleasing batter.
AB is fun to watch, but I don't know if he's always aesthetic.
I think for me, he is jump about like a rabbit. If you look at his test stuff.
Because I do think, it's test stuff, fair enough. I'll give you that.
Some of his shots, in that 2018 season, I think that is why I would have him really high. But yeah, Rohit Sharma is definitely very high up my list of aesthetic batters. No doubt about that.
Talked about lots of Rohit's good innings, his great innings, what he's done in tough pitches. But let's discuss his decline for a bit, right? Because going back to the aesthetics, I think Rohit, for me, has always made playing shots look easy. Like, whereas I think with Virat, I'd say Virat makes run scoring look easy, but I don't think if Virat plays a cover drive, I can see him putting effort into it. It doesn't feel effortless for me. Whereas when Rohit plays it, he looks effortless.
There's that lazy elegance thing, right?
So Rohit goes from being like, how does he make batting look so easy, to good God, has he ever held a bat in his life? Right? It looked like it got to the point where in Australia, where I had more faith in Mohammad Siraj's defense than I did Rohit's.
Actually, man, I think Bumrah took more wickets than he scored runs.
I think Bumrah also scored more runs than Rohit.
So I think that
it was not far off. He averages 6.2 in that series, right?
Yeah, and I think that was declined bad
hard to the point where I know it's not test cricket, but I was thinking about his IPL innings recently. He doesn't make batting look effortless to me anymore. I'm like, Rohit looks like a human again. Like, I can see he's putting in effort, right? Like, compare that to, like, it almost felt like, do you know how, are you familiar with the butterfly effect?
Yeah.
Do you know how, like, if a random butterfly flips its wings in Peru, there's a hurricane in America or something, right? I'm like, I don't know what butterfly flipped its wings that Rohit suddenly stopped making runs. Like, it was almost instant, right? He played 92 or 41 versus Australia, which is about as good an innings I've ever seen with Mahmoodun Tiwari.
Exactly. I think that's suddenly the best T20 knock for me.
I think that's one of the greatest T20 knocks ever. Forget Rohit.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right?
For sure.
He goes from that to then not looking like he's ever held a bat in his own life. Well, even Bangladesh, right? I think he doesn't look like the Rohit we know. Right?
Yeah, I think that's where his decline starts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Against he's getting out to pace early on. I think those were concerning signs.
But I would give Rohit this, compared to like declining Rohit. I think Rohit got out in a more aesthetically pleasing way. The whole top of all dismissal, right? I'm like with Rohit, oh, Virat, why did you do that? And I'm like, Rohit, bloody hell, that was a good ball.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I can watch Pat Cummins bowling Rohit all day.
Shubman Gill is also in this conversation. Like, even his dismissals are very aesthetically pleasing. So like,
Scott Boland, pitching one outside off and hitting the middle stump. Mitchell Stark with that Yorker.
That's dark delivery which Gill faced and he got bowled in Adelaide.
Yeah. Also, like, the unrelated where people are like, why don't people just bowl outside off and hit the top of leg stump for Shubman Gill? He's bad versus it. I'm like, most batters in Test history are bad versus that ball, man. Like, you could say he's more susceptible to the ball coming in, but.
Correct.
Like, so it's like, so with Rohit again, like, why do you think he suddenly declines that badly, right? To the point where I think that decline is so bad, people start grouping Rohit Sharma with Virat Kohli. They're like, oh, we've carried these two for so long now. You're like, they didn't. I'm like, Rohit was making runs in February versus him.
Right. Exactly. So I think this one pattern that we have to really talk about is that their declines were very different and their whole careers have been very different. We've all been very well aware of that. So I think Kohli's decline is like from 2020 to 2022, he stops making runs. And I think it's that Ahmedabad test again where he makes 100 and then he has a few more good tests. Till South Africa, he's looking really good. Then Rohit Sharma's decline, it really starts. He has a good England series. And then I remember doing this piece actually with Jared about who's the best test opener in the world. And Rohit Sharma was again in the top three. So I think that was the piece that I did just before you joined. So I think after that, Rohit Sharma's next 9 matches, I think he misses one game, right? Yeah. So he misses 2 games. Yeah. So the last 8 games that he plays, they don't go well. And he's not always opening in all of those. But the last 8 games for him, they just go really bad. Like, they just go from bad to worse. And for Kohli, it's been like, it's been a more prolonged decline. Then there's a start, like a bit of an up, and then again it's a decline. But I think at no point can we say that Kohli ever looked as bad as Rohit did in these last 10 matches. Can we?
Yeah. Because I think Kohli.
That is the interesting thing. But before that, Kohli was better than Virat in tests, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
For those 2 years,
right? Rohit was in probably, you'd say, one of India's best batches. I think it's either him or Pant for a long time.
3-4 years. Right? Yeah.
It's either him or Rishabh Pant, definitely. And when Pant wasn't there, Rohit was the only one who was making runs, right?
Exactly.
And the occasional Jadeja camera.
Where would you have Rohit Sharma in Sena countries, though? Like in the 2020s? I think 1 and 2 have to be KL Rahul and Rishabh Pant. And then after that, then it's a bit of an open discussion.
Yeah.
But so overall, I think I would also go with Rohit and Pant. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Because can you not make an argument that Jadeja has the same Sena hundreds as Rohit does in that period?
But then he's batting lower down the order, isn't he? So I think we have to still put some tax for that.
So does Pant in that. So Pant, I think, is more versatile across the board. Like, Pant does well in Australia. He does well in South Africa. He has good contributions in England.
Yeah.
But again,
I think even I would go with Pant. Yeah.
So entire issue with Rohit is that he does not play a lot of Sena tests where he could have.
Yeah.
It's not a case of like India just didn't play in his era. That we can understand that. But he misses so many, which is not always his fault, but it is. You have to have an asterisk with this Sena career, don't you?
I think that's the right way to put it. Like, there's a bit of an asterisk, a bit of a question mark around his legacy as a test batter away from home. I think that still sort of remains, even though he had that big England tour and those are like good memories as an Indian fan. But I think, yeah, his test batting away from home, it's a bit of a question mark even now. Like, even as he ends, we're saying that he's an all-time good test player. And again, most of it is because of his home record. And he was outstanding at home. And I think if we actually look at the best home test batters for India, he would be really high up that list. I'm pretty convinced about that.
The other one where we were looking at it before, like yesterday, was him in wins. He was averaging 57 in wins. Which is amongst the best for Indian batters ever, right?
Yeah. In wins, he's been really good.
And we already mentioned how all his centuries come in wins.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, he doesn't really have...
more than wins. I'm a fan of the result games filter that we often keep discussing.
Yeah, we always talk about result
games. Wins plus losses. Because I think if we remove losses, then what happens is that guys like Kohli and Sachin, they have played a lot of their best knots when they've had no help. So I think removing that sort of like affects their this thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that's becoming one of my favorite things, right?
Yeah.
It's the whole thing of like,
I think Rohit was really good in result pitches at home. I'll just go back and see what we looked up.
Yeah, you sent me this, I think, yesterday.
Yeah. I'm not interested to see what exactly happened there. Result games, Rohit Sharma averages 50.74 in result games at home.
10 centuries and 650s.
Yeah, exactly. That is a really good record to have, isn't it?
And as we mentioned, most of those have been shit pitches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially since 2021. And as we talked about his best knocks, actually, I think another one of his underrated innings is the one in Ahmedabad, right? Like, I think it's third test. Yeah, it is the third test. The ping ball test. I think where he makes 50 or 60 runs. He made. I think 56, if I'm not getting it wrong.
66. So
I think he makes 66. Yeah, exactly. I think Kohli was also looking really good in that innings. And then he gets out towards the end of stumps.
India were like 100 for 2 and then they collapsed like 160.
And then that was an impossible wicket to play cricket on, man. Like, and Rohit Sharma was making it look easy there. So I think that was also another very special knock.
That had the famous Kohli quote.
That doesn't talk about as much.
Do you remember the famous Virat Kohli quote? Like, the pitch wasn't tough. Everyone just kept getting out to straight balls.
Actually, yeah.
But, so Rohit has 500s, I think. I can't count. So from 2021, he has 1, 2, 3, so 4. No, it's not 4. So 4. So 4 of his hundreds are, I think, after 2021. So that's a lots of decent hundreds on really tough wickets, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, yeah. So
I think you would say you can't say he didn't earn any of them. And the one flat pitch he plays in that period is Ahmedabad. He gets out cheaply.
Yeah. Actually, if you remember that series, even in Delhi, he had a good contribution. I think Delhi, that first innings in Delhi, I think Rohit gets a start, then Kohli has a good in, then Kohli plays a good knock. Then towards the end, it's that Akshar partnership and the lower order batters again chipping in.
So he makes,
I think
Jadeja also makes runs.
Jadeja and Ashwin also make runs, if I'm not wrong. Yeah. And then in the fourth innings chase, which could have been a bit tricky, I think.
Yeah,
makes quick runs in that innings as well. So I think that was also like a decent contribution from him.
India would have lost that series without Rohit.
Exactly. So I think
at the very least drawn, right?
I think I was actually thinking about this before our podcast. So the way I would put it is that Rohit Sharma wasn't a massive part of the start of India's peak at home. Like from 2013 to 2019, I think it's fair to say that he is not among the five or seven most important players for India
in
that successful period. Maybe even more than that. But
we
then
can actually
Rohit
probably
Sharma,
rank them, right? So we got Ashwin, Jadeja, Kohli,
Pujara.
Umesh,
of course.
Shami. Ishant.
Yeah, even Ishant. Yeah, Murli Vijay in that period.
Yeah.
He does have a few good knocks, man.
I'd have Rahane above Vijay in that period.
Would you?
Pujara. Did I mention Pujara yet?
We mentioned Pujara long back, like just after Kohli.
I might mention Rahane more in that period, you know.
Probably. But I think I would go with Murli Vijay because he used to make a lot of those big hundreds. I think maybe it's just a wide split. But yeah. Anyways, my point being that he was not the most important player then. But Rohit Sharma, Rishabh Pant, Akshar Patel, these guys were really important in prolonging that streak of India not losing a home series. Isn't it? I think that's sort of what their legacy can be.
Yeah. So
when the pitches got hard.
Let's briefly talk about his captaincy as well, right?
We should.
So I believe Rohit has the unwanted record of having the second most defeats for an Indian captain at home.
Oh.
And we were just talking about how he has an elite Indian team, probably the best seven. So he captained 16 games, 10 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw. Right? So I think it's still one of the best win-loss ratios for an Indian home captain.
Mm-hmm.
So as win percentages, sorry, not win-loss.
Yeah, but win percentages, correct.
So there's always discussion about like what's more important, bowling or batting in Test cricket. We know that bowlers win you games, batters give you consistency. So if you have great batters, you don't lose, right? So that's why if you look at the old Indian records, it's like even though they don't win, they barely lose because you don't dismiss Indian batters in India.
Yeah. I think India have never been a bad team at home since like the 90s, right? Like they've always had.
In the 80s, they were not terrible.
Even in the 80s, they would have been good. Yeah.
So they just grew.
I think
they
it's
just
the 90s when they start peaking at home. They don't lose a home series in the 90s, if I'm not wrong.
So the 90s home team was better than the 2000s home team.
Oh, that is an interesting one. I have to look more.
So I think the 2000s, they just draw more. I think that's why what happened. In the 90s, they still dominate quite well. They're not as good as the modern Indian team.
Correct.
Going back to the batting thing, one of the reasons why people are always talk about Rohit's captaincy is like, is he defensive? Is he like passive? Like, one thing I will give in defense to Rohit is that one of the reasons that India lost so much more is because the batting just did not make a lot of runs. Part of it is pitches. But also, I think the parts of it is India just didn't play in a batter's in form.
Yeah. I think the New Zealand series like...
But Kohli, Pujara, Rahane went out of form, was it?
But so, I think if we're talking about Rohit's captaincy, I think we have to start with the New Zealand series. Like, if we're talking about the negatives, like where people have question marks about him as a test captain, I think it's that New Zealand series where I think some of the criticism is actually quite fair. Like, if you remember... I think New Zealand were like 200 odd for 7 and Saudi was there and then Saudi actually made a lot of runs and like those are the sort of things you don't want to allow ideally and then you want to be to use...
He doesn't bowl Bumrah to them, does he? Or is it... He doesn't
he doesn't bring Bumrah on at the right time if I'm getting this right. So, I think you just want to be able to ensure that the lead doesn't go that much more, right? So, I think that was one fair criticism of Rohit in that test match. And I think
also you could
kind of
hold the toss against him, right? He's like, I will bat first and we'll just see out the opening spot. So it's like it logically makes sense. But the one thing I'd have against Rohit is at what point in the last few years did you think India played moving ball well? And saw and saw the conditions.
Correct.
You had the confidence that you guys would do it.
Exactly. And I think India against the moving ball, most of the batters they do struggle. I think and interestingly in that game, KL Rahul came in very late. And he's one of the better players of the moving ball in this team.
He came in at
5 or 6.
Who is it? Yashasvi Jaiswal and Rishabh Pant made like 33 of the runs or something, right?
Yeah. And Kohli had come at number 3 in that innings, I remember. And Willow Rook got him out. Yeah, what was happening in that match?
Strange game that, right?
Yeah. So
I think you could kind of hold that against him a bit. And
I think that New Zealand series, I think it's a bit fair. Even in Melbourne, if you remember, I think that Melbourne test, where again we see the tail-enders make a lot of runs. Like, they just stay for a long time, and I think...
That's the other point I was going to bring. Like, there is also a black mark that he did potentially injure Bumrah.
Exactly. That he did overhaul Bumrah. I think it's the Joe Root and Archer thing.
So, the day four thing you were talking about, Bumrah would look dead, and he kept bringing him back for spell after spell. So
he
because
was like, nahi ho raha, bro, something
not,
like that.
Yeah, the other Indian bowlers just could not get them out, right? And Bumrah, I think, just looked visibly dead by that point.
Man. I think I give the example of Joe Root and Jofra Archer. I think this is also a bit similar to that. Let's hope that Bumrah plays a lot more tests for India and we don't really have any more issues. That would be the ideal scenario, I'm sure. And so I think, overbowling Bumrah, not sometimes like getting a bit too defensive with the field settings probably, and like just not bringing on the right bowlers at the right times. Maybe some of this is also hindsight, right? And again, if we're talking about his test captaincy, I actually rate his England series really highly as a captain, because he won 4-1 with all the new players, with Virat Kohli was not there, when KL Rahul was also not there after the first test match. Shami was not there in that series, and India were 1-0 down after the first match. So I think that was actually a very special performance from him.
I think with Rohit, I never had a lot of issue with the selection. It's more the issue I had with him was on-field tactics, where I do think he was a bit passive at times, which I did find quite interesting. Possibly. Because in T20 cricket, we almost associate it to be with like a good, very tactical captain.
In white ball cricket, we always say that Rohit Sharma and MS Dhoni both are really good. But then when we talk about red ball, we're like, okay, Virat Kohli was like a really good red ball test captain. Also because a lot of the players back him up, right? This is also an important thing. How do your players that have played under you talk about you? That's part of the reason why Ganguly is rated so highly even now as a captain. Mm-hmm. And he deserves it, I think. I think he definitely deserves a lot of it. And because of that, for Rohit Sharma, I think if you go back, a lot of the young players that talk about him as a leader, it's the human side of things that he understands. I was actually having this conversation with my friends about Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli as leaders. So I think Rohit Sharma really gets this one thing better, that because Rohit Sharma has seen more highs and lows in his career than Virat Kohli. And Virat Kohli is like the ultimate definition of professionalism. He would expect everybody to be at that level at all times, right? High intensity, just going for the win and all that. Rohit Sharma gets the human side of things. He understands failures. So I think in that regard, he was definitely a good leader. He did lead the Indian team well, even in Test cricket for that small period. Even that drawn series in South Africa, you have to give him some credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought us the trophy at home. So I think it's not that it was all bad. I think it just became really bad towards the end. So I think, again, obviously it's about agendas. The people who have agendas and conspiracy theories and all, they would be ready to put down any player, I think. But I think Rohit Sharma's legacy as a test captain isn't that massive. But yeah, I think he did a fine job. Especially because of that England series.
The New Zealand series definitely hurts his test legacy,
New
right?
Zealand and then Australia overbowling Bumrah, like we said. I think those two do have like a bit of a question mark then.
Yeah, also, I was just going to say with Virat, I think Virat also had periods of horrible selection as a captain.
Yeah, he did. I think he became more stable after a point. And then he became so stable with the selection that people were like, okay, why isn't he dropping Pujara and Rahane now? So I think that thing was also there.
So, as a closing thoughts, I think we can... So, Rohit Sharma, I think, is fair to say, was not a great test player. But
I wouldn't say he's an all-time great test player, yeah.
No, I don't think...
Maybe an Indian all-time great, but are you sure about that?
I don't know. But he does play a lot of great innings in a way. Sometimes even players who are better than him probably haven't, right? I think that's fair to say.
That England series again at home.
The England series, Australia's 127. England away.
England away also really good.
And a bunch of other cameos here and there, right? So where would you rank him amongst Indian openers?
Yeah, I think this is actually an interesting one. I think I'll have to go back and... So, 1 second. So I think obviously the 1 and 2, there is no question about 1 and 2. We know Gavaskar and Sehwag are the two best test openers that India has ever produced for multiple reasons, sample size, what all they've achieved home and away, everything. Even with Sehwag, you can say, even though he's not been that great away from him, but because he's been so good at home and the whole strike rate thing and everything, you still have to rate him really highly as a test opener, as a test batter. So I think those two are obviously clear. Then it's an interesting one, right? Like I think, like I said before, it's Gautam Gambhir, Murali Vijay, Rohit Sharma in a similar cluster of sorts for me. And my issue with Rohit Sharma here is that he, like we discussed before, he misses a few games in Sena countries. I think if he plays most of those, let's say he plays like 90% of his games as an opener in Sena countries, I think I would be confident in saying that I would rate them higher than those two other openers. But I think at the moment, I might go Murali Vijay, Gautam Gambhir and Rohit Sharma. But I have to do more research on this. But from those three, I think
you changed your opinion on that, didn't you? Because you were more, I think you were higher on Rohit before, weren't you?
Compared to Murali Vijay?
Yeah, I think so.
No. I think I was pro Murali Vijay only. When I was looking at the stats, even though I because we talked about that period, right? That 2013 to 15 period where Vijay actually made a lot of runs. Like, he had that whole run. We talk about this even in an IPL context, right? Like, we want players to have like a consistent streak of performances. So we know that, okay, yeah, this is a performance. This is a stretch that you can remember, and we can say that they were reliable players in this point. So I think for me, I think because of that reason, I'd have Vijay above him. And I think Gautam Gambhir is the interesting one, because I think I still have to do more research on this, but I just because Gambhir at times, he had those really iconic knocks away from him, I think. And even at home, he was a really good player, and he has that higher sample size as well. So
I think for now, Gambhir, right? I wouldn't rate his New Zealand knocks very highly, because it wasn't a great attack. But then again,
India won that series, and India hadn't won in New Zealand for a time. And they do that test match, right? Like, it was a special series, I think.
I would say that like New Zealand were like the ninth best team in the world at that point. I think 8th or 9th. India were probably like number 4. Do you not expect them to win away from them? It's like if India went to, I don't know, like Bangladesh right now, would you not expect
fair enough,
right?
That's a good point, actually.
There is an element. We always like, because it's New Zealand in a way, we are like, oh, well, it's a massive series win. I'm like, I don't know if it is necessarily a massive, because this Indian team plays better New Zealand teams, right? So I think 2002, I think they do lose, but those were terrible pitches, I think, from memory. It's a bit, they had their own version of Rang Turners at that point, right?
correct.
So, and the other thing with, I'm willing to give Gambhir the South African performances, because he still went up
against South Africa as well.
Yeah, but again, so even with the new ball, he was going up against Sosobe and Steyn. Like, Steyn was obviously at the peak of his powers, but it's like,
I'm not the first change bowler in that series.
I think he was he not? Because Philander then replaces Sosobe, I know that.
Yeah. Philander replaces him, he does. I think in the next season.
So that's not a great new ball attack, right? So that's why I'm a bit more sketchy on Gambhir's overseas record.
No, I get it.
Rohit doesn't make a lot of runs.
The sample size. Because Gambhir is at 4,119 runs. And Rohit Sharma is at 2,697. So I think that's like a bit more sample size, right? Like, we have to give him some credit for that. And I think even KL Rahul is an interesting one in this debate. Of course, he hasn't done as well at home. So I think that sort of disqualifies him from this conversation in a sense. But I think if it's Sena countries, then I think KL Rahul goes back up again.
But with Sena, could you not argue KL was also better than Sehwag?
Yeah, I think that is the interesting one, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
In Sena countries, KL Rahul, I don't think the open discussion is as straightforward as we think it is, right?
Yeah, so I think we can still probably say he's a top 5 test opener for India, right? I think that is a safe take.
I think...
But I think Jaiswal will come and probably change that. Obviously.
Jaiswal already
interestingly looked this up right now, and Jaiswal is not too far behind Rohit Sharma in terms of the runs tally. So, like I said before, Rohit Sharma is at 2,697 and Jaiswal is at 1,798. He's like a couple of big series away from overtaking Rohit Sharma's full tally, and he's probably not even going to be in his peak by then. So
So I was talking to you before. I think if Jaiswal had averaged 35 across these 10 tests, I think he has a great run, right? He averaged like 44.2 or something in Australia. He completely exceeded my expectation.
Absolutely,
even if he averages 30 in these 5 tests in England, I don't mind it.
Jaiswal, I think he's there for 10 years now. The sort of quality that he has shown you. Casual fans
would probably be like, oh, he can't play the moving ball. I'm like, that's fine. He's only like, what, 22, 23?
Yeah.
Like, do you know how many Indian openers don't average 30 and they play much more experienced than Jaiswal was? In England,
I think it's the same thing with Shubman Gill as well, right? Like, we have to be more patient with these players because they have not yet reached their peak batting years, and they've also, like, with Gill, what happened was that he ended up missing Perth and MCD, the two best batting surfaces on that Australia tour, and I think he has worked out how to bat well in home. Like, he actually had a few really good knocks in that New Zealand series as well in Wankhede.
Yeah, that's a 9C, right?
Yeah, he was batting really well in that innings, wasn't he? And then in Pune also, I think he had a start, or I think he had a good contribution of sorts, if I'm not wrong. And then in the England series also, he does well. So I think at home, he figures out how to do well. But then away, I think it's still a bit of a question mark. But I think we'll be patient. So I think we have to probably end on this note and say, who do you think replaces Rohit Sharma in the test team? How would you put it?
I assume KL Rahul, because he replaced Rohit Sharma already, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think even I would say the same. But then, because of that Rohit Sharma slot opening up, how do you see India's top 6 shaping up for the England tour? Or top 7, rather, for that matter?
We probably have like similar opinions. I think we'd slightly differ, but...
Yeah, more or less same.
So I have Jaiswal and KL. I think I have Sai Sudarshan or Devdutt Padikkal at 3. I don't mind either or. I think Devdutt can like dig in, right? Like, I don't know if Devdutt has averages 30 at a record of 40 and pisses off Basbo.
I think we'll take that.
Out of Gill at 4.
Yeah, same.
So I think five is where we differ. I think you had Nitish at five.
Yeah, I think that's one of the teams that I had Nitish in, but I'm willing to go with a more conventional battle like Karun Nair or Sarfaraz or even Devdutt Padikkal in that slot with Sai Sudarshan at three. So I think I don't mind that at all. But
so
five, I think it's an interesting...
or six, to me, five or six are interchangeable depending on entry point. So if the top four play out 30 overs, I'd send in Pant. If not, want like a Jurel, Sarfaraz, Karun Nair.
Yeah, I don't mind. Even Jurel.
Patidar, Shreyas Iyer. One of those batters, right? One of those would be five and one of those would be six, depending on...
Agreed.
Because if it's 24-3, I do not send out Rishabh Pant. Gautam Gambhir, if you're watching this, do not send Pant out.
Yeah,
donuts. And also,
actually, the thing is that he might still be your best batter in that situation, but you can't expect that consistently from him because he's keeping wickets.
Yeah, because
I think that is the tricky
part. We were looking at the entry points. He was basically a number four in Australia. He wasn't even a five.
Said, exactly.
You know how I feel about this. I think Pant is a number six that's batting at number five and he's doing number four.
I think now I'm on the camp of Rishabh Pant batting at number six in Test cricket because with wicket keeping and then coming in early consistently, that is not very sustainable according to me. I think
so number seven.
At home, I think I'm still fine with him being a number five, but
away
from home, I think number six is right for him.
So number seven is if Reddy can bowl 20 overs a test match, him. Otherwise, Jadeja.
Yeah, same.
I don't mind Washington or Akshar. Like, I don't think it really matters.
Whatever all-rounder they think works well. And then I think the bowlers, we have the same.
Yeah. So have Kuldeep, Bumrah. Those are the two guarantees. And then two of Shami, Siraj, Prasidh, Akashdeep, Harshit.
Yeah,
play two of them. I don't think it really matters because I think all of them are pretty equally as bad in England. So I don't think it really matters.
Let's see. I think Siraj has the ability to do well. And I think he had a good break as well. But let's see how it translates in the series. And what do you think about Shardul Thakur? Would you be interested in like considering him as an option? Like in
the squad, I think if India had three trustworthy seamers, I wouldn't mind. But
if they have three good like frontline fast bowlers, like the way they had Bumrah, Shami and Siraj, and or even Ishan for that matter. I think Shardul... I think in the Oval Test where Shardul, I think, actually ends up winning player of the match, doesn't he? I think in that Test match, where Rohit Sharma made 127. So I think in that match, Shardul Thakur actually plays at number 8. And he's the fourth pacer. I think after Bumrah, Siraj and Umesh Yadav. So I think as a fourth pacer, I think as a fourth pacer, Shardul is good. But as a third pacer, even I have a few doubts.
Yeah, because I also think that like if they, let's say they go with four seamers and Jadeja is the fifth bowler. Jadeja is not very good in England.
But I think he's good defensively. I think we can't expect wickets from him, but he'll do fine defensively, I think.
But like even defensively, but like I don't mind that if I trust the four fast bowlers to take wickets. I don't trust the four fast bowlers to take wickets, which is my issue.
Yeah, no, I think that's why we want Kuldeep. Taking Kuldeep for sure.
Yeah, that's why we want Kuldeep in the team, right?
Because
Rohit and Virat are retired, I'm more terrified how this team will fail. Because when they were playing, I'm like, okay, if both Virat and Rohit play, they're just going to be shit with the bat and they're not going to make enough runs. Now I'm like, they could either be shit with the bat, shit with the ball, good with the bat, shit with the ball, good with the ball and shit with the bat, or shit with both of them. And all of those things are equal chances of happening. Right?
True.
It's going to be both hilarious and terrifying to watch this entire whole saga take place.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So I think we've done justice to Rohit Sharma, the test batter, the test captain in his career. I think it's safe to say he's an all-time good test player, at least in an Indian context.
He's an all-time good. All right. So that's it for today, folks. It's a bit of a marathon podcast from both of us. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did. And it's, again, as I said, apologies for the structural mess. It's the first time I'm hosting. So you can't expect. And it's the first Footmarks without Behram or Jared, interestingly enough, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you any, so go to goodareas.co to find out all of our pieces. Do bookmark it, subscribe to it. And go and watch all of our other Footmarks or anything on this very channel. On the Good Areas live channel or on if you're listening on Spotify. And that's it for now, folks. Thank you so much for watching or listening to this. And if we get more than like 100 people watching this, I'll be very surprised without either of them. So yeah, thank you very much and have a good day.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.